Coming up on Golf Today, Xander Schauffele secures win number 6 on the PGA Tour at the Travelers Championship. He'll join us coming up. This week, the DP World Tour is at the Horizon Irish Open. We will take you there live. And what might be the defining relationship between the DP World Tour and the PGA Tour, and what will it mean for the Ryder Cup? Jim Gallagher Jr., the man who took down Seve in singles, joins us to discuss.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
Hello and welcome into Golf Today. I am Matt Adams alongside of Eamon Lynch. And Eamon, the golf news cycle of the last 24 hours has been packed with information, and we will get into that again, but it is not refreshing to be sitting on the eve of actual golf.
Doesn't it make you grateful for tea times, Matt? You can't legislate for the news cycle or when things are actually going to happen. There may be more stuff happening today, for all we know. But thanks to tea times, we do actually know when the real meat on the bone is to be found here with golf. And that's actually 2:30 a.m. Eastern time, which is when the tea times get underway at the Horizon Irish Open, about 3,500 miles east of here.
And I'm very excited about that, too, because all of us are looking forward to, obviously, the Open, the 150th edition of the oldest major in the game of golf, getting underway at the old course at St. Andrews. But we have these weeks like this, that in between it, we have the John Deere and we have the Irish Open. And we're going to be covering all of that for you because we're super excited about taking you live to Ireland on today's show, as you heard in our tease, and also going out to Illinois and talking more about the John Deere.
My question to you is, does it diminish the Irish Open in your mind when it's on a Parkland course versus on a links golf course?
Yes.
I'm sure we'll get back to this during the show.
Yeah, I'm sure we will too. But I believe that Ireland has the greatest links golf courses in all the world. And I'm happy to justify that later on in the program. That's what he's referring to. He's teasing you about what's coming up later on. But when the DP World Tour set up the run-up to the Open, as the concept originally was links golf, and it was going to be the Irish Open, then we go to the Scottish Open, and then, of course, we go to the grand stage of the Open itself in the Rota. It has changed in the last couple of years. Now, that much of those changes are due to commercial reasons, but it has changed. So it's still golf in Ireland. It's still going to be brilliant. But personally, I would rather see it on one of the great links courses.
As would I. And we had actually a great run of links courses there. It was at Lahinch. It was at Ballyliffin. Problem is, I don't think you're going to get the best players in the world who are going to commit to playing 3 consecutive weeks of links golf if they're going to do the Irish, the Scottish, and the Open Championship. And I certainly don't think you're going to get them to do the Irish, take a week off over there.
No.
And then do the Open. And I just don't see these guys committing to 3 weeks of links golf because you hear too many of them talk about the readjustment back to PGA Tour golf in the aftermath of playing links golf. I don't see them ever doing 3 weeks in a row. From a viewer perspective, a fan perspective, I'd always rather see that.
Yeah, I do think there is the possibility of the 3 weeks from my sake, because I think that if it is a co-sanctioned event, and that's why I asked Keith Pelley about it in our program yesterday in Golf Central, and he kind of hedged on that and said maybe down the road, but they have intimated that the possibility exists. All right, let's flash back a couple of years on the PGA Tour. The then 23-year-old Xander Schauffele. He beat some of the best players in the world at the Tour Championship. It was Xander's second PGA Tour win, both coming that season. Now, fast forward, 2020 Tokyo Olympics. It was played, of course, in 2021. Xander, representing the United States of America, he won the gold medal to edge Rory Sabatini, representing Slovakia, by 1 shot. And then, last week at the Travelers, we start here. Par 5, 6 hole, this putt, 10 feet, 8 inches for birdie.
This would get Xander to 18 under par, and the lead is 3.
At this point, it looks like Xander Schauffele is cruising. Let's jump ahead to the par 3, 11th. From 163 yards, he had 26 feet left for birdie.
This is a beautiful worm's eye view. It starts to wobble one way, wobbles back the next. Another little wobble. 19 under par, and the lead is back to 3.
That one wobbles him to that same lead that he had enjoyed earlier. And then there was this, steely-eyed at the par 4 18th. Only 105 left for his approach.
And you present great players with an opportunity to win, they do things like this. Spins it to 3 feet.
That 3 feet would give them the luxury of two putts to win the championship. But he only needed one. Xander Schauffele enjoying the immediacy of the warm sun of victory at TPC River Highlands. He sent this out to the world in social media. Thank you, Travelers Championship, and all the fans who came out and created an incredible atmosphere. Up next, the Scottish Open and then the Open. As to the time period between, since his last individual win, which was January of 2019 at the Century Tournament of Champions, it'd been 74 events, 23 top 10s, 14 top three finishes, and of course the two victories, which included the team with Patrick Cantlay and then at the Travelers. We are delighted to welcome Xander Schauffele onto Golf Today. Xander, you've had a couple days now in the wake of your championship at the Travelers Championship. I'm just curious about how your emotions are now, how satisfied you are now. Are you a person that allows yourself to kind of look back and celebrate on what you just did?
Yeah, I think so. It's been, well, first off, thanks for having me on. It's been a very low key couple days here in Las Vegas for my wife, my dogs, and I. just got back to celebrate my anniversary just in time. And that's pretty much what we've been doing. It's been just very relaxing. And yeah, I think I've had a little bit of time to reflect. It's kind of a quick turnaround for us, leaving for the Scottish here in a couple days. So, you know, I'll take what I can from last week, but for the most part, it's kind of chumming forward. So maybe, you know, maybe in a couple months, I'll look back on this one.
Xander, it had become this kind of rote recitation that you hadn't won in 3.5 years and you had 8 second place finishes in that time. Did it start to frustrate or irritate you that you were reminded of that as often as you were until you got the next individual win on the PGA Tour?
Yeah, you know, I think it was a fresh reminder every week, you know, hearing it. I don't have much social media on me, so I do try to avoid a lot of talk or chatter. But for the most part, you know, I think those kind of things typically motivate me. You know, I don't want people to think they can keep telling me that I haven't won very often for the most part. But yeah, I think I typically use those comments or those things as motivation to keep practicing and keep pushing forward.
Once you break through then, such as you did last week at the Travelers Championship, Xander, how much does that give you a renewed resolve, this idea that I can do it? It's not going to be a twist of fate or a playoff drop putt here or there that's going to keep me from the winner's circle. You're back there again. What are your thoughts and feelings moving forward?
They're solid. A little bit more concrete, I guess, in thought about what I'm doing on the golf course. I mean, I kind of spoke about it before. You know, the Olympics was a big moment. I'd say that was sort of the big monkey off my back, being able to win the Olympics with the 54-hole lead. And I think that's sort of, it doesn't count towards anything on the PGA Tour. But to me personally and to my team and I, it counted. And so I had to draw back a lot on that experience there in Japan when I was playing over there in Connecticut, because that's the only thing I had in my pocket.
You mentioned, Xander, that you're going now this week to the Scottish Open. You've played Lynx Golf well before. You tied second at Carnoustie in the Open 4 years ago. Do you enjoy that kind of golf? And have you ever actually seen the old course?
Yes, I enjoy the golf very much. You know, being an American, growing up and playing Parkland golf, I really enjoy the challenge, playing in different weather, knowing that you're just trying to get the ball in the hole when the weather's bad or, you know, based on the terrain you're playing on. And yeah, I mean, I really enjoy playing on that kind of style of golf. And then after Carnoustie, I was pretty reluctant to do anything, but my dad did drag me to St. Andrews. He wanted to see it for himself. So we did drive around the outskirts of town, and we took a peek at a few of the holes, but I've never really been on property.
Oh, we're going to have to talk to you more about that. That's a classic story right there. I wanted to jump back to Travelers one more time. And maybe this relates to what you were saying and drawing upon the experience you had in closing out your gold medal at the Olympics. When you were the way that golf course lays out, you can see everything that's happening in front of you as you're reaching those final few holes. You could see what Thigala was doing. And watching you from afar, You seem to have a steeliness, particularly as we got to 17 and 18. You could physically see, Xander, that you seemed to get very focused, very intense. I'm curious what was going on internally at that time with your emotions and your focus, and does that relate back to what you just told us about drawing on your Olympics experience?
Yeah, I think so. You know, at the Olympics, I knew I wasn't playing as well as I was playing at the Travelers, and I kind of had this miss going. So I wasn't too rattled when I sort of hit a stray ball on 18. I think that kind of calmed me because I prepared myself for it. At the Travelers, I knew that I was playing a little bit better. I was hitting the ball much more solid. I was putting really well. So as long as I was able to focus enough, I told myself if I can focus enough that I'll be able to put myself in a position to win. And so I think that's sort of what you saw there on 17 and 18. I mean, I saw what Sahith was doing from, I think, 13 on. Mm-hmm. I saw him make a putt on 13. I saw him make a putt on 14. I saw him two putt on 15. I didn't see what happened on 16, but I could hear everyone clapping. So I assumed he made par. And then 17, I heard the roar and watched him make the putt. And then 18, I get to the tee. And of course, I'm expecting to make birdie. And once again, I kind of saw what was happening in the left bunker. And then I just told myself I have to lock in here. You know, I can't expect anything. I have to assume he's going to, you know, hole out for par or bogey or do something crazy. So I just figured why not focus as much as I possibly can and take care of what I can do. And so that's sort of what you saw there.
Xander, throughout your career, your statistical performance is remarkably consistent. There's never really any wild fluctuations in any part of your game. And the only obvious leap these days is you're better in driving accuracy than you had been previously. Are you working on anything, or when you're playing well, do you just stop worrying about stuff like that and focus on trying to ride the wave?
Yeah, you know, my dad has criticized me recently for, tinkering, as he would say, too much, or not letting myself just play golf and thinking about, you know, my golf swing too much. And so this weekend, in Connecticut, I told Austin I really want to try and work on our process and work on things together in terms of, you know, picking the right number, committing to the right number. I think you sort of saw a little bit of that deliberateness on Saturday. I actually ended up watching myself play on TV Saturday night just for a few holes, and I was honestly astonished by how slow I was playing. I know I'm not the fastest guy, but I realized how slow I was playing, and so I had a word with Austin Sunday morning on the range. He actually watched it too, being in his hotel room, and we both agreed that, you know, we're being deliberate, but we don't, if it's, you know, 110 front, 115 pin, 5 yards of wind, it's 121 ball to land a yard past. That's what we came up with. Let's just commit to it. You know, I think on Saturday, I was really trying to make sure I wasn't going to make a mistake on the course when it came to, you know, picking the right number or the right club. And so I really was taking too much time. And on Sunday, I really wanted to commit more and commit faster just so I wouldn't even, you know, being so deliberate, it makes you, you know, double check or triple check yourself. And that's almost, you know, not a good thing either.
Xander, I have to tell you, I'm still smiling over the story of you and your dad driving out to the old course of St. Andrews and getting a glimpse at a few of the holes and not actually taking your clubs. I think they would have probably let you guys go out, but that is an awesome story. You're on your way to the Renaissance Club and then, of course, to the Open. How are you feeling in terms of mindset, emotions, game preparation, lack maybe of tinkering, if you will, as you enter this final major of the year at the old course? It's the 150th. There's going to be so much buzz and excitement surrounding it.
I'm so excited. I don't really get too excited to go to golf courses, and to be completely honest. I love competing, and that's sort of what I like to do. If we had a crazy competition on a par three course versus playing like the coolest course in the world, I'd probably rather go to the par three course where the crazy competition is. But I think this time around, I know my dad in particular and myself are very excited to go over to St. Andrews and check out this property because we've seen it on TV so many times.
I got to ask you another question too. Who watches the dogs when you guys go on the road?
Well, my wife stays at home a lot of the times. You know, she doesn't want to leave them all alone, but my in-laws I owe them a lot. They do watch the dogs a ton.
Xander, we've seen a lot of news and change in the world of golf for months in the last couple of years, particularly in the last week. On the PGA Tour yesterday, they announced a closer alignment with the DP World Tour. Last week, the commissioner announced they're going down to 70 fully exempt players who make the playoff versus 125. What do you make of the changes that the PGA Tour seems to be making right now?
You know, I think those two organizations have been working closely for quite some time. I think they sort of, finally put pen to paper on sort of what they're trying to do moving forward to basically make sure that, you know, the PGA Tour stays the best tour in the world. You know, I think there's been some competition and some threats coming along the way here, and they've recognized that, and they're working together to basically work together to be the best and stay the best. And I think they're doing everything they can to make sure that no one else sort of defects or goes away. And so, I met with Jay Monday of Travelers and talked to him, prior to his meeting that he had with the players on Tuesday. And so I knew a little bit of what was going on, but it was kind of nice to hear him sort of put everything on paper and really give us a reason to stay.
Xander, as an equipment geek, I wanted to ask you one last question as you're getting ready to head across the pond. Any changes in your bag, any modifications as you're getting ready for Lynx Golf over the next few weeks?
Just the classic ones. I'd say, the hybrid or 7-wood may turn into a 2-iron or 3-iron. I'd say, other than that, I'd say green speed is usually the place. You're going to hit a lot sort of longer putts from, typically where you'd kind of chip it and air it out here on this side of the pond. You're going to putt it from, 20 yards or 30 yards off the green. So making sure you have the right loft on your putter is another thing. But other than that, I'd say the 3-iron is typically the big one, that needs to come into play to get the ball running.
Xander, thank you so much for the time that you spent with us today. It was great to catch up with you again, and it was really fun to both look back on your recent victory at the Travelers Championship and share your enthusiasm going forward for Lynx Golf that lies in your future, in particular at the Old Course of St. Andrews. We wish you the very, very best.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Still coming up on Golf Today, we're going to take you across the pond for the Irish Open. Our friend and colleague Rex Hoggard is enjoying a soft Irish rain and manageable winds. He'll join us right on the other side of this break. Welcome back to Golf Today. It is a big week in the DP World Tour as it heads to Mount Juliet Estate for the Irish Open, home to over 5,000 years of history, including ancient mysteries and millennia-old myths and legends. You can explore Ireland's ancient East and peel back the very layers of time. All right, notables in the field this week at the Horizon Irish Open. There you can see Oppie Bonrat, Padraig Harrington, we're going to hear from just a second, Lucas Herbert, Shane Lowry, Peters. That's Alex Fitzpatrick. That's Matt's brother making his professional debut this week. Terrell Hatton, Minwoo Lee, Bob McIntyre, Seamus Power amongst those in the field. As we say hello to Rex Hoggard, who is in Ireland for this Horizon Irish Open. Rex, what do you have for us from the Emerald Isle?
Matt, you guys noticed earlier, I do have the rain jacket on, and it's been a typical Irish day as far as the weather went. It started out with a little bit of sunshine, and then it rained a little bit, and then it got windy. But none of that had anything to do with the crowds that flocked out today just to watch the Pro-Am. And you talk to the players, that's just one of the reasons why this event means so much to the Irishmen in this field.
Well, it's obviously my home tournament, and it kick-started my career for me. I got an invite to the Irish Open in 2009 when I was still an amateur, and I won the tournament. It got me the head start to my career that I never thought I would have. So, not that I feel like I owe the tournament a lot, but it's great to come back every year. And, especially when you're playing okay and there's a bit of excitement around, it's nice to, nice to see that buzz around the place, and I'm looking forward to the week ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's just everything. I've been in the States for, on and off for college for 15 years. So, I don't get to play that much in front of, people I grew up playing golf with and friends and family. So just being able to kind of play in front of them and have their support, it's going to be incredible. It's something I don't get a lot, so really looking forward to it.
It's great to be here with the home fans. It feels good after a win as well. It gets a bit of a buzz for me to be here. I had a big crowd out there watching me in the Pro-Am and signing autographs and all that goes with it, and hopefully with a bit of form going in if you play well. It's quite a burden playing in front of your home crowd if you don't play well. You feel like you're letting them down. So hopefully we've got a few players who are in good form, so hopefully we have some of the Irish, and me in particular, up there on the leaderboard. And we've a new sponsor, Horizon, the $6 million event, so it's a big event in Europe. There's quite a buzz about it with the players and the spectators. I would even say with the spectators, you know, it's been a while with COVID and that. We're really only just getting back to normality. So there should be a great buzz here this week.
Now, I also had a chance to ask Podgru about yesterday's news about the enhanced alliance between the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour and exactly where he sees that alliance heading in the future.
I was worried for the European Tour. You know, there's certainly room for two big tours in golf. And, you know, LIV look like they're committed and here to stay. You know, and it's been interesting because, you know, the original tact was, you know, where's the money coming from and kind of pushing the moral grounds. But LIV are here to stay. So now the PGA Tour and Europe are going, well, OK, well, we're going to do a better job. We're going to run our golf events. We're going to, you know, they're tackling it by concentrating and focusing on themselves. And this is positive because, as I said, European Tour looked like the one that was going to get squeezed. You know, the PGA Tour is always going to be there. So it was the European Tour that was going to be the one who's going to get relegated out of golf to some extent. Having the support now of the PGA Tour, having the, you know, what looks like a very positive initiative going forward, does give a pathway for players to stick in Europe and play in Europe. And you don't want players leaving quickly because, you know, if you're 18, 19 years of age and you don't want to go to college in the States because it's quite a change for a European to go to the States. And as a kid, 18, 19, it's a huge change. So some kids don't want to do that. And having a good European tour where they can learn and grow their own game in a good environment, a safe environment in terms of, you know, if their form goes off, they'll still be here. They'll still be looked after, sort of thing. Whereas if you could throw some of our 21-year-olds over to the States, and you know, if they don't play well automatically quickly, you know, they're playing mini tours and they're getting beaten by a guy who's like me, 50 years of age, beating them by four shots, you know, because you know these guys can do it, you know, on the mini tours, and then all of a sudden they lose their form and there's nowhere to go. So it is very positive that the idea that Europe will stay strong. We need a strong European tour to grow our players.
Now, as you guys know, Podrick is fresh off his victory on Sunday at the U.S. Senior Open, and he told me normally in this situation he'd be over on the range grinding away, wanting to play his absolute best this week. But he said instead he's going to enjoy that victory on Sunday and savor the opportunity to play in front of the home team. Matt?
Rex, thank you very much. Great job, as always. It was great to hear from Podrick as well. Podrick Harrington will get his week started tomorrow at 8 a.m. Eastern time alongside of Thomas Peters and Lucas Herbert, who won his first PGA Tour event in the fall at the Butterfield Bermuda Championship. Interesting comments then from Podrick Harrington about what were his concerns for the future of the DP World Tour. I know you spoke to him about it. We had a chance to speak to him about it yesterday on Golf Today. Did you notice any shift after the news between the DP World Tour and the PGA Tour?
Yesterday, when we talked to Podrick, there was an uncertainty that is no longer there. It was, where is the DP World Tour's place in the firmament here of golf tours? And to me, it's what happened yesterday has cemented the reality. And the reality is that the DP World Tour has, frankly, it's never been the equal of the PGA Tour as a business product. In terms of talent that comes out of it, absolutely. They produce some of the greatest players in the world and still do. But in terms of the business of a tour, you take your average European Tour event, you're probably talking about a $2-2.5 million purse. Mm-hmm. The baseline that you're starting with on the PGA Tour is $7 million. So they're not really on an equal footing in that respect. But Podrick made the very astute point that in terms of a proving ground for players working their way up through the game, it's a great place to play. And there are safety nets that are attached to playing on the European Tour, where if you launch yourself onto the PGA Tour here at a very early age, it's very difficult to actually stay there because also the level of golf is a little higher. You learn how to travel. You learn the vagaries and hassles of PGA Tour life a lot more traveling around the world playing the European Tour than you will staying domestic on the PGA Tour or Corn Ferry Tour to that extent. So I think he looked and sounded today as though he was a little more settled and assured in terms of what the DP World Tour's role is here. And it's clearly been ring-fenced and secured by the investment from the PGA Tour.
Yeah, I think he actually did as good a job, as admirable a job in defining the DP World Tour and who they are and where they fit. Instead of just telling us that they're not a feeder system to the PGA Tour, he defined what they actually are. And I like the fact that you, first of all, spoke to the safety net that the players have. And I wanted to touch on that in a second. But first of all, I want to talk about the business side. We're already seeing the fruits of this relationship because this week, Horizon associated with the Irish Open. Next week, Genesis associated both title sponsors for these events, the Scottish Open next week for Genesis. That's real money, and that's something that the European Tour has needed support and help with. Their largest television audience is here in the United States, so there was benefits all around. As to the safety net side, though, I'm glad that Padraig let us know the human side. What he was talking about is you've got these, I'm going to say kids, and I mean that respectfully, but 18, 19, 20 years old, if they decide that they are not going to go to college or be a part of the mostly American collegiate system, for example, that they can play in Europe. And he specifically said if their swing starts to get off, they're not that far from home. They're close enough that they can go back to those who have helped them in the past with their respective games. So I liked all that. I liked the fact that he set up the DP World Tour for player growth. And it's not just on an individual basis, but a collective basis as well. And we know from those coming now from the Sunshine Tour or those coming from the Australasia Tour that they have a direct pathway into the DP World Tour as well. So the DP World Tour has always been bigger than just being called the European Tour. They truly are now a global proving ground as they get ready, perhaps, to graduate to the level of the PGA Tour.
Culture is also a little bit different as well in some respects. Padraig used to say that when he first came out on tour, Des Smith was kind of like the mother hen of Irish players on the what was then the European Tour. He would insist you had to come to dinner, that you spent time with each other. You almost build a social network out there. Padraig wanted to go to the range. He wanted to go to his hotel room. Des Smith wouldn't let him do it, dragged him out. Now Padraig's in that role himself where he's doing that for younger guys out there on tour. And to me, it's that kind of stubborn pride in their own tour that has given the edge to the Ryder Cup team for Europe for so long. It's this idea that they were lesser than the PGA Tour. And in economic terms, they were. That is simply the reality. But there's a pride that's built into the DP World Tour that comes as much from the diversity of where its participants and competitors come from
and, I think
and what they go through.
That's an important part of building the confidence as they step forward. As we talked about, look at Alex Fitzpatrick starting this week at the Horizon Irish Open as he gets ready, and he is a product of the American collegiate system. So those are where these roads can continue to cross.
Well, business and geopolitics aside, it's John Deere Classic Week on the PGA Tour. After the break, Kira K. Dixon will join us. She's been talking to some of the fresh faces in the field at TPC Deer Run. Stay with us.
Welcome back to Golf Today. The PGA Tour swings over to the Midwest this week for the John Deere Classic at TPC Deer Run in Silvis, Illinois. For many, it's one of the last few chances to qualify for the Open Championship, while for others, it's a week where PGA Tour dreams turn into reality. John Deere Classic, first-time winners since 2013. You remember back in 2013 when Jordan Spieth blasted his way into fulfilling the start of the promise. In 2014, of course, Brian Harman showed us his grit. 2017 was when Bryson DeChambeau was starting the narrative. 2018, Michael Kim, he won by 8 shots that year, the collegiate star, now pro winner, earning his way to Carnoustie. And then in 2019, in Dylan Fratelli's victory, a very popular win for a very popular winner. And with more, we bring in Kira K. Dixon, who joins us live from Silvis, Illinois. Hiya, Kira.
Hi, Maddie. Well, the way that you just said it, turning dreams into reality, is something of a tradition here at the John Deere Classic. Names like Jordan Spieth, Jason Day, Zach Johnson, all of them can trace some sort of their success back to their history here at the John Deere Classic. And continuing that tradition are two recipients of sponsor exemptions this year. Chris Goddard and Quinn Riley are going to take advantage of that opportunity. Quinn Riley is a recent graduate from Duke, a standout on the Duke golf team. He recently made his first professional start at the Rex Open on the Korn Ferry Tour just a few weeks ago. And this week, he's making his PGA Tour debut. debut. Now joining him here this week is Chris Goddarup, also a college golf standout at Oklahoma, recipient of the Haskins Award, the Nicklaus Award, and he just played the weekend at the U.S. Open and Travelers. So coming in to this week with plenty of experience and confidence, he actually wrote a letter to Claire Peterson, the tournament director here, very, very early on in the process to get his name in the mix. And here was his reaction and Quinn's to finding out the news that they would be in the field.
I was excited. You know, Claire called me when I was still in school, and I remember getting in my room, and yeah, he was just thrilled to honor me with it. And he was saying, "I hope you can come." And I was like, "Are you kidding me? This is no brainer for me. I'm here."
He said that you wrote a letter pretty early on, and then he was really impressed with how you played, I believe at Puerto Rico. What did you say in your letter?
Yeah, I was just, you know, trying to put my name in the mix and tried to explain who I was a little bit and, you know, what I've achieved and whatnot, and just a little bit to get to know me a little more. So hard to do that over a letter, and I tried to give him a couple phone calls too here and there. But, yeah, I just tried to get my name in the mix for the most part, honestly.
It just feels like I've been waiting my whole life for this. Super exciting. I'm looking forward to all the amenities for the week and just having my family here and watching me, and it's going to be a great week.
You told me yesterday that, you know, there's kind of a great reaction with your family when you found out that you were going to be teeing it up in the John Deere Classic. Can you just tell us that story?
Yeah, everyone was super excited. I talked to Claire, and as soon as he hung up, I was just like walking around the room like in disbelief. And then I called my girlfriend and my mom, and both of them were super excited. My girlfriend was screaming and stuff. So, yeah, it was a great day.
Now, you heard Quinn mention Claire there. Claire Peterson, the tournament director again here at the John Deere Classic, is retiring after 20 years. I talked to him on the range, and he started to choke up when he was telling me about Quinn Riley's letter. He actually read that letter out loud in a boardroom where everyone in that room was in complete consensus that Quinn should have a spot here at the John Deere Classic. And Quinn told me that his entire family is here. He's got uncles, cousins, his girlfriend, his mom. They've all rented an Airbnb to be together to cheer him on in his debut on the PGA Tour.
Part of what makes that event so very, very special indeed. Kira, thank you very much. We're looking forward to all your work this week.
Well, don't miss any of the action this week. First round coverage of the John Deere Classic comes your way Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern, right here on Golf Channel. 5 years ago, Jason Day was on top of the world rankings and a major champion. He's still a major champion, but now he's ranked 137 and not yet eligible to play the Open Championship in St. Andrews. Can he earn his spot this week at the John Deere Classic? And with all of the turmoil in professional golf these days, what is the impact going to be on the Ryder Cup? Jim Gallagher Jr. is a veteran of the biennial battle. He'll join us to sort things out. Golf Today continues now.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
Welcome back to Golf Today. I'm Eamon Lynch, sitting next to Matt Adams. And Matt, it's a big week for the Farm Machinery Set. It's the fifth major for the Farm Machinery Set on the PGA Tour.
I love the John Deere Classic. I think it's, again, one of these in-between weeks on the PGA Tour. We're all getting geared up for the Open at the Old Course at St. Andrews. But you've got the John Deere Classic on the PGA Tour. On the DP World Tour, we have the Horizon Irish Open. Two great events, great history. The John Deere is a great one because of who it introduces us to as we move on down the road. And the Irish Open has a very stout history of its own. And when you have great golf in the morning, great golf in the afternoon, it's a win from a fan's perspective.
And certainly two tournaments with their own character. Last year at the John Deere Classic, the winner was Lucas Glover. It was his first victory in 10 years. He birdied five of his last seven holes to shoot a final round 64. Glover's last previous victory was at the Wells Fargo Championship at Quail Hollow back in 2011. Here's what happened between those wins for the 2009 US Open champion. It was his fourth career victory last year at the John Deere Classic. His first win in 10 years, as we said, 3,717 days between those two victories. Well, let's go back out to Kira K. Dixon at Deer Run. Kira, you had a chance to catch up with the defending champion, right?
I did, Eamon, and that 10-year drought finally came to a close here last year. So it was a moment that really proved to Lucas Glover that he still had the desire and the drive to compete at 42 years old. I spoke with him earlier today about just how special it is to be back at the site of his victory.
It's been good. It's been great. They do such a great job here, and the community gets behind it. And it's been a good week so far.
How do you feel about your game coming back to defend? I know you mentioned that you've made some setup changes.
Yeah, just some small things in my setup that haven't really taken yet, but it was good last week, make the cut, and then got some reps over the weekend. Just trying to get some confidence, just build, and anytime there's a change, it takes a little while, but seeing it in competition last week, and the good was good, and the bad was bad, but at least I know why it was bad, and I think that's a big plus.
Any extra pressure in defending, or just business as usual?
I think business as usual. I think when I said it inside a second ago, when we wake up tomorrow, everybody's tied at zero. Everybody's setting out to win. Everybody's motivated, and everybody wants to play well. And so, wake up tomorrow and business as usual.
Well, someone else who's excited to be back at the John Deere Classic, even though it's been 12 years, is Webb Simpson. And I actually didn't know this story about Webb, but he proposed to his wife, Dowd, here at the John Deere Classic. They went out to the river nearby, and he dropped down on one knee at the dock. He said that the thing that he was most nervous about was dropping the ring in between the boards of the dock than her actually saying yes. But here's what he had to say about the feelings that evoke coming back to the John Deere Classic.
I feel great. Missed the cut at the U.S. Open, but flew home. Paul came with me. We got some good work done. It was one of those missed cuts that really stung to miss by one. Any cut you miss by one really stings, but especially at a major. But it led to a couple of good days of work where we worked through some stuff. And then, you know, last week that work paid off. I didn't have the finish I wanted, but it was a lot better considering how I've played this year. And, you know, I always like to think the game's going in the right direction, but right now I know it is, and that's a good feeling.
Yesterday, the PGA Tour and DP World Tour announced some news about strengthening their existing alliance. How important do you think those changes are?
I think very important. I mean, it seems like every week right now there's a big announcement in the golf world, whether it's from DP Tour, our tour, or LIV. So I think Jay is doing a great job of getting the PGA Tour product stronger, broader, wider. I'm excited to see how that will play out in the years to come. But it certainly gives, I think, players around the world more hope as to they're going to have more opportunities to get on better tours and more avenues, I think, for that. And once you make it to the top, I guess, league or tour, PGA Tour, it is going to be the most elite golfers in the world. And so I'm looking forward to kind of being a part of that.
Now, earlier in the show, we mentioned how sponsor exemptions have been a big part of the ethos of this tournament. And Lucas Glover was given an opportunity to play here when he had no status. Webb Simpson was a recipient of one of those sponsor exemptions as well. So they think of this tournament extremely fondly. They trace a lot of their success back to the experience that they were able to gain at the John Deere Classic. So, guys, the good vibes are rolling here at the Quad Cities.
And we appreciate you bringing us some of those good vibes, Kara. It's similar to last week at the Travelers Championship and then this week at the John Deere, where you have players that get committed to these events because they love the vibe of the events. Major champions in the field this week at the John Deere Classic include Zach Johnson, where it's very much a home game for him, Jason Duffner, Lucas Glover, Jason Day, and Webb Simpson. Speaking of one of those, Jason Day, official year-end world rankings. Here's where you look. Let's go back to 2014. Jason Day was 8th in the world. 2015, 2nd in the world. 2016, he reached the crescendo of number 1, but then it started to slowly slip away. 17th, 13th, 14th, and then all the way to where we stand right now, 123rd in the world. It is not as if Eamon, 123rd ranked player in the globe, is exactly a bad place to be, but when you've been number 1, the question is going to be asked with Jason Day. What is the reason, principally, do you feel there's been an erosion?
There have been a lot of reasons, I would think. Not least is that his body has always been very brittle. He's had a string of back issues over the years that he's never quite managed to recover from. He's even been forced into the position of making swing changes based on the limitations of his body. And he's also had a lot of personal distractions in his life, particularly over the last couple of years. There was his mother's diagnosis with cancer and her eventual passing earlier this year. He's also got a growing family. So there are a lot of personal distractions that make, you know, playing golf is hard to do for a living. Doing it when there are a lot of distractions in your life as well, and a lot of emotional distractions with that, I think it's a little harder. But there's a definite erosion in his on-course performance as well. If you go back to that breakout year for him, really, in 2016, when he was number one in the world, coming off the victories in the PGA Championship in 15, he was a regular winner in 16. In strokes gained total, he was number one on the PGA Tour. Right now, he's 99th. He was also number one in strokes gained putting back in the 2016 season. He's now tied for 60th in that. There's nothing is really elevated in his game since then. It's just a lot of gradual erosion.
He's definitely showed us some glimpses of potentially finding his form again. I think it's serves to be underscored the fact that the issues that he had with his body. Now, you focus specifically on his back, but if you ever have the opportunity to hear Jason Day recount what's hurting him at any one given point in time, you're talking about neck, you're talking about elbow. It's multiple things that are happening to him. So the work that he's been doing on the golf swing is showing some flashes of gaining consistency, because it's the consistency that he's really lacked over these last few years. And that swing is intended to take pressure off the back principally. One of the points that you brought up was the putter. And with Jason Day, for a player that was as physical as he was when he was at the height of his prowess, he looked like he could be playing Australian rugby. Yet it was that flat stick that was the great equalizer for him when he was leading the tour in putting. And it's interesting that that has kind of slipped away as well. And it's not unusual that we see it with players when they're searching for their game. It almost starts from the hole backwards to the tee. And even with that, he just doesn't look like he has the same assurance to it when he stands up over the ball.
And we've heard the same stuff from Tiger Woods over the years. As Tiger's back has become more and more of an issue, he says he practices a lot less because he's just simply not going to stand in that position.
Good
on
point.
A putting green for hour after hour, one would assume that Jason Day has the same limitations as well. But the flashes of brilliance don't quite come often enough, which just explains the 137th world ranking. I mean, he did finish tied third in the Farmers earlier this year, at the start of the year at Torrey Pines, but that's his only top 10 since the Travelers Championship last year. And that's just not delivery on the talent that Jason Day has or the work ethic that Jason Day has. So to me, that points to the other distractions that go on in his life and the body issues that he's trying to find a workable way around with his golf swing.
Were you concerned when he split with Colin Swatford? Is there any chance that this also could be just father time?
It could be father time. You know, he's 35 years old this year. It's eventually the swing starts to get away from you. Everything erodes with time, as we can attest, Matt. But, you know, when guys start to feel a slip, certainly when they've been number one and they've been major champions. And let's not forget, when he won a major championship, it was the lowest under par total that anyone had ever posted in a men's major championship. And it was just a dominating run that he was on. So when you start to slip down the other side of the mountain, then you start to look for solutions that could be something other than you and your own body. So it's not that unusual to see a caddy go or a coach go at that point. The question is, if he does find his way back, how much time does he have to do that? We look at Ricky Fowler, who doesn't have the physical issues, who's got the swing issues going on now. Ricky Fowler struggling to find his way back to the player that he once was as well. Sometimes the road's never easy, but sometimes the road doesn't bring you back there.
Well, hopefully it will be for these two players that you mentioned, Ricky and with Jason Day, because they are very popular players, and I think everyone would enjoy watching them play a good vein of golf again. News from the PGA Tour today as they announced the CJ Cup will be played at Congaree Golf Club in October. The tournament name will be changed to the CJ Cup in South Carolina. The tournament was launched as Korea's first official PGA Tour event in 2017, but was relocated to the United States, of course, due to the COVID-19 pandemic. And still coming up on Golf Today, on the heels of the PGA Tour and DP World Tours announced alliance yesterday, getting deeper, we look ahead to the future of the Ryder Cup, and our very own Ryder Cup star, Jim Gallagher Jr., joins the show. Stick around. Welcome back to Golf Today. The alliance between the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour is getting stronger. It's an alliance that was first announced back in November of 2020, and then just yesterday, some of the first details of how the two tours plan to work even closely, more closely together in the future. Here's some of the details of what all that means. There's a new 13-year operational joint venture partnership. The PGA Tour has increased its stake in European Tour productions, going from 15% to 40%. And now the DP World Tour guarantees growth in annual prize funds to members for the next 5 years. Also, the Sunshine Tour and the PGA Tour of Australasia now will enjoy a formal pathway to the DP World Tour. And then, starting in 2023, the top 10 players at the end of the season's DP World Tour rankings, in addition to those already exempt, well, they will earn PGA Tour cards. Now, the United States took back the Ryder Cup in an emphatic fashion at Whistling Straits in the fall of 2021, defeating Team Europe 19-9. The news, however, yesterday got us looking ahead to the future of the Ryder Cup. So, Eamon, do you think that this deepening of the relationship between the DP World Tour, owners of the European half of the Ryder Cup, and the PGA Tour, who heretofore do not have any ownership in stake at all in the U.S. side of the Ryder Cup, as that belongs to the PGA of America, will it change anything about the event with this new relationship?
No, because that only becomes an issue, or the PGA Tour only has a say in it, if those two organizations ever go farther down the road and get to a merger. As it is now, they've stopped short of an actual merger. What will have an impact on the Ryder Cup, and it's a fascinating angle to the story, is the whole turmoil with LIV Golf as well, and how the tours react in terms of suspending players and not allowing them to compete on the PGA Tour. Because if you look at the PGA of America's criteria for players to compete for Team USA, they have to be members of the PGA of America. That membership is awarded automatically by being members of the PGA Tour. Now, several players have already resigned their PGA Tour membership to go play for LIV. Others have not, but several have. Those players are automatically ineligible now to compete at a Ryder Cup. And no matter what decision the PGA of America makes down the road in terms of how guys are going to become eligible for it, their problem is very different from the European problem, because Europe, as we saw from that drubbing they took last year, is already in flux. They're caught between generations of players. You know, some guys are aging out. Other guys haven't quite climbed up the ladder enough to make Ryder Cup teams. Their issue caused by LIV is more related to the captaincy. It's the guys that were assumed to be future captains of the European team, which is a Lee Westwood, an Ian Poulter, a Graham McDowell. Those guys are probably all off the table now in terms of ever captaining the European side. The American team has a little more immediate problem.
Incidentally, that is fascinating.
I actually don't think it's fascinating, but it's not a huge problem in that Europe, you know, Tony Jacklin captained 4 teams in a row. Mm-hmm. Bernard Gallagher captained 3 teams in a row. I've always been struck by this idea that the captains have to be recycled after every team. If somebody wins the Super Bowl, you don't kick the coach out because it's someone else's turn. And I think the European and American Ryder Cup teams should go back to that idea. But while it's a captaincy issue for the Europeans, it's a player issue for the American side, because they're seeing more American players go to LIV to sign up there. They're losing their PGA of America membership and they become ineligible to play. So it becomes, I think, potentially more troublesome thing on the American side. But at this point, both the European side and the American side are probably giving silent thanks for the pandemic that made this an issue for next year rather than a more immediate issue it would have been for this year.
Yeah, I think some of the points that you touched on there, Eamon, in my view, need a little more definition. I disagree with your assessment that this deeper association will not have an impact on the European side in terms of Ryder Cup points, et cetera, et cetera. From my sources, they're at a point where every substantial decision they're making right now is made in consultation with the PGA Tour. So I do think it would have some impact on it. And when you talk about a decision by the PGA of America. I had a conversation with Davis Love III about this, and he refers to it as Team USA. You know, when we went from the task force to now there's players and representatives, et cetera, they call it Team USA. And Team USA is both the President's Cup and the Ryder Cup in terms of how they look at Ascension and how they have copied the European model of taking these captains from a co-captain to a vice captain to a primary captain, et cetera, kind of that ascension there. Think about what I just said. If it is Team USA and half of it is the President's Cup emotionally and from a structure standpoint, that takes out those guys that you were talking about will live regardless of anything that happens on the PGA of America side. And I also think the PGA of America has clearly shown us that they're in a position going, well, we're going to see what the guys think first. We're going to wait on that committee so that they can tell us what direction they want to go. So I think this is going to have, I think it's going to have a big impact on this.
I think it will have an impact emotionally on a lot of guys because they have to reconcile themselves to the fact that guys who don't want to be on the team aren't on the team. You don't go chasing them. You go find out who's your next feeder system coming on to the team. And I think you're probably going to see that as an immediate issue for Davis Love and Trevor Immelman in the President's Cup this year. But let's not understate the commercial importance of the Ryder Cup as
Massive.
Well. They do not want it messed with at all because it funds the PGA of America's four-year budget and it funds and runs the European Tour, DP World Tour as well. It's an enormous cash cow. It's the single biggest team event in golf without equal.
Yeah.
And it's got an enormous commercial importance to these people as well. They are not willing to see it jeopardized.
Absolutely. So let's talk some more about that with someone that was there, Jim Gallagher Jr. This is the man that took down Seve in singles when he was representing the USA. You know I was going to get in there, rightfully so.
You are.
So what's your opinion on all this, Jim? Where do you fall on this conversation?
I kind of agree with Eamon. I mean, you're losing players on the American side, and I feel like the American team is kind of where the European team was 10, 15 years ago. The roles have been kind of reversed. Europe has some older players and everything, probably affects their captaincy more. It's just such a complex situation. It's changing every week. And I think the PGA of America is sitting back, deciding how they want to kind of handle it. But it will affect the President's Cup right now more than it does the Ryder Cup because we don't know exactly. But Eamon's right. You have to be a PGA of America member on the PGA to play for Team USA. So that is part of the equation there.
Do you have any fear, Jim, that what's going on in terms of tour golf, whether it's LIV, PGA or DP World Tour, in any way will have some cascading effect that could diminish the Ryder Cup, certainly from a fan experience?
I sure hope not. I think it's still going to be there. It's still that competition. You want the best players who are playing the best there. I sure hope it doesn't. And there's a couple guys that probably who have gone to LIV Tour that would have probably been possibly on the American Ryder Cup team. But I think the team that's affected the most of the teams right now is the President's Cup over the Ryder Cup because that's just coming up in a few months.
You know, Jim, I think back in the days, in 1993, when you were a part of that United States Ryder Cup team, and it was very typical then, and I'm curious what your recollections are, that the American team would come over, and even post-Tony Jacklin, with all that they did to try to level the playing field in so many different ways, there still was this sense of your team coming over as the mighty American Ryder Cup team. And I think there was an emotional fuel there for the European side in terms of trying to take down Team USA. Given this growing allegiance between the DP World Tour and the PGA Tour, do you think a bit of that sharpened edge will come off?
No, not at all. It's still going to be there. You know, I think that's the beauty of it. The European team always took the underdog role. They loved that role, even though when they were the favorites, and they continue to win. They kind of took that role, and that's kind of how they went with it. And that just shows you how the game's grown globally so much, that they were so much stronger. And the American team was getting older 10, 15 years ago, and now you're seeing that kind of revolt, kind of changing right now. But no, they're still going to want to beat the American team. The American's going to want to beat the European team. That's still going to be there. And it's amazing, like you talked about me in 93, when I meet people from Europe, and they still remember that with me beating Seve. And I always respected the European guys. I always, you know, I got along with those guys just fine. But for that week, it was just completely different. It was a rivalry that was built. And it's the greatest thing we do playing golf is representing our country. But the Ryder Cup was one of the most fun things I've ever been part of. And I've just been part of it from the TV side. It's so amazing to see the fans. And that's what we have to have, the fans, and they're supporting it. That's what makes it so great. We saw that at Whistling Straits with the fans for the American side. We'll see that the next time when you go over there. Of course, I was over there when we won, and it's a different feeling when you're the away team. But there's nothing better than silence when you're the away team when you're over there.
Jim, you mentioned this honor of playing for your country, and you're of that generation of players where seeing the flag run up the pole is really the only motivation that you needed. You didn't need a hug on the first tee and be told how wonderful you are. Are you in any way disappointed at how many potential future Ryder Cup players have been willing to potentially not play for their country again purely because somebody offered them enough money?
I hope they don't miss out on it, because it was one of the greatest experiences I've ever been part of. And it's something that when I look back at my career, it will be that one week that I made friends with guys like Raymond Floyd, Tom Kite, Lanny Watkins, and the guys my age. Those veterans kind of made me feel like an equal. And I've never felt like that when I was on the PGA Tour until that bond that we had. And we had Raymond Floyd at the Masters on our set, and it was just like the old days. Tom Watson was my captain. I think it's just such an amazing thing when you hear from guys who are part of that on either side, Europe and the Americans. I hope they don't miss out on it, because I'm telling you, it was one of the greatest weeks I had playing golf, and something I'll always remember. And I could tell my grandkids that. My kids sort of part of that, but it's stories that it last a lifetime. So I hope they don't miss out on it. We'll have to see how that all plays out.
Well, Jim, we want to thank you very much for your time and remind everyone that one of the images that we can never forget from 1993 in that Ryder Cup was the sweater that continues to reverberate through time.
It doesn't quite fit now.
Jimmy, thank you so much. It was good to catch up with you. We appreciate your insights. So,
well, earlier this year, the PGA of America announced that Zach Johnson will be the next captain of the United States Ryder Cup team. The 2023 Ryder Cup will be held in Rome, Italy. Zach is back in the Quad Cities this week, and he caught up with our own Kira K. Dixon.
Zach Johnson teeing it up at the John Deere Classic for the 20th time. The only thing that could keep you away from the John Deere Classic is a pandemic. So clearly this event has meant so much to you. What are the feelings as you come back once again?
Oh, it's always awesome. I mean, I love being on the site, you know, at TPC here, Deer Run. I love, you know, as I said in the presser, I feel like I wear a number of different hats this week. You know, obviously I'm a local, so there's one, but I represent this company, the green and yellow of John Deere. And I also wear a hat of as a board member of the tournament. So this week is special. It's just, you know, somebody asked me, you know, of all the distractions you have and everything you're – you know what? I don't have that. There's nothing here that distracts me. I just welcome it. I love it. I just love seeing friendly faces, family, certainly, and friends. And it's, and I like the golf course. I like the tournament. It's been good to me. And the assumption is I've won here like four or five times, and I've won once. So I'd like to change that, but that's going to be easier said than done. Mm-hmm. So I'm encouraged and excited about the week.
Well, you've been close many times.
Well, fair.
One of those friendly faces is Claire Peterson, who is retiring after 20 years. You guys have kind of come up together through this event. He gave you some wonderful opportunities early in your career. Looking back, just how much of an impact has he made on your life?
Well, quite a bit. I mean, yeah, he did. I was able to get a sponsor exemption when I didn't have status on the PGA Tour. You know, being somewhat local, that was I had some successes in the mini tours, if you will, but didn't have to do that, and whomever decided, they allowed me that opportunity. I didn't play very well, but it was experience. I mean, you can't really measure that. It's hard to quantify that. So I owe a lot in that regard as a young pro. But then also, you know, the relationship we have here, Claire and I, is one of it's friendship first and foremost. But then we also want to help and serve this community, because this community has given us so much. He lives here, obviously, and it's on his heart to to represent, again, John Deere, the tournament, and the community. And we see it when he comes out on the West Coast to the East Coast. He loves wearing that logo and is proud of it. He's passionate about it, and he's fearless in trying to make this event better and bigger. So I love him for that. And, you know, and then along the same vein, they actually helped me and my foundation out quite a bit, and that's special. I mean, that's the beauty of the game of golf, is the platform we have, the PGA Tour, and how they've constructed their events and how they've constructed, I would say, the entertainment side of golf, but also just a unique platform to give and serve and be a good steward of what we've been given. It's pretty special.
Something that sweetens the pot here a bit are the three spots that are up for grabs at the Open. Yeah. And that's not something that you need to worry about, but there are plenty of folks in the field that would love those spots. So how much does that play into a competitor's mindset when there's that on the back end to worry about in addition to playing good golf?
Sure. I mean, I guess I really don't know specifically, but I will say, I mean, I've had instances on tour where, man, if I can crack this, I can maybe qualify for that, or, you know, maybe your world ranking goes up or your FedEx Cup number goes up or whatever it may be, right? I mean, you got these other thoughts, some of which you're in control of, you know, but a lot of which you're not. I mean, you can only do so much, you know, on the leaderboard. I mean, you can control your golf ball to some degree, and that's it. So my advice would be just worry about where your feet are right now. You know, let everything else kind of take care of itself. Yes, there's three spots typically, or, you know, available this week for the Open. But you know what? The more you concentrate on that, this tournament – and the importance of this week will be trumped, and you don't want that. You want to stay right where you are and work. And I think the more you can focus on that, the better that other outcome can be.
Well, thanks for the time and enjoy the week.
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate it.
Well, Zach Johnson gets his week underway at 2:05 Eastern time tomorrow, alongside the last two winners of the John Deere Classic, Dylan Fratelli and Lucas Glover.
All right, keep me up to pace on what's going to happen here on Golf Channel on Thursday. The Horizon Irish Open kicks off at 8 a.m. Eastern time. The John Deere Classic from 3 p.m. Eastern time in the afternoon, and then Golf Central wraps it all up at 6 p.m. Eastern time. Well, it is the Horizon Irish Open this week. Next week is the Genesis Scottish Open. So we pose the question, Eamon, Scottish links or Irish links? Which one is superior?
To me, it's Scottish. You know, Ireland's all about romance. Scotland's all about history. And I'm going to peg you as somebody who's more into the romance. But I look upon golf courses or destinations the way you would a great museum. You can't judge it on a few works of art. And if you look at the B tier of courses in Scotland, which is your Cruden Bays, North Berwick, if North Berwick is on your B tier, your A tier is unimpeachable.
There's a very simple reason why Eamon Lynch is absolutely wrong about this perspective. Here's the thing. When you have Ireland completely unprotected from the ravages of the Atlantic Ocean, millions and millions upon millions of years, it has formed that coastline that causes these massive dunes and plummeting valleys. Scotland has Ireland in between it. Great history, I'll grant you that. But if you want to play the best links golf of your life, it is going to be in Ireland. And I'm going to keep speaking until we're going off the air. For Eamon Lynch, I'm Matt Adams. See ya.